From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. It's always good to have somebody on the show who has what can best be defined as an innate sense of style.
Wow, innate. And
innate, I think it is.
That's beautiful.
And basically started by him building out ensembles for himself because
yes.
As a man of stature and a man of color.
Absolutely.
Warren Boswell had to figure out what would suit him best, and he's gone on to a wardrobe. Many of our finer people in the NBA, from LeBron James, Chris Bosh, to, gosh, also now you do Mr. Fear of God?
Well, the thing is this. People always ask me, do you only do stuff for athletes? I say, no, I do stuff for people with credit cards.
Aww.
That's everyone.
Oh, there's money in it. But when I met you about a year ago, you had just come off of doing that incredible piece that Colin Kaepernick wore for
yes.
the GQ cover, for his Man
yes.
of the Year cover.
Yes.
And talk about how that came to happen.
So it came about, Rachel Johnson is a good friend of mine, and she actually assisted me with kind of like spearheading the generation prior to this current generation of NBA players. And,
that was a big shift because that was still back in the days of five-button.
Oh, absolutely.
Big box, they were still dressing
yes,
as Cedric
yes.
the Entertainer.
There are, if you go to Google Images and just type in Michael Jordan 1993, you will see some of the most atrocious things you've ever seen in life.
You know a man could wear that many pleats.
My God. But you know what, though? I actually like pleats.
I like a single pleat myself.
Exactly. Not too many, but you know. But anyway, to your answer and your question, Rachel said, you know, I have a project for you. And it's going to be phenomenal, but I can't tell you anything else. So, like, you know, like when somebody does that, you naturally are like, what is it? And she said, just give me some time. I got to iron some stuff out. And then she called me and she said, Colin Kaepernick. I said, well, what do I need to do? She said, well, they need it in like 48 to 72 hours, which is phenomenal.
Which is crazy.
And, and you know, she was like, this is what the budget is. This is what we can do. But, like, I'm all for being on the right side of history. And specifically as it applied to this, it was beyond the right side of history. And, you know, what he means to not only culture, but to, you know, just the black community and just to every community. Everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to have their peace. They want to be treated fairly. They don't want to be, you know, shot down in the street. I mean, like, it's just the things that he stands for is just like, well, where do I sign up?
And you should describe the outfit for those who haven't seen it. It's a beautiful black
suit. It's a black peak lapel, one button, and it was a flat front. And it was like, I believe the fabric was, I mean, I literally gave him the King's fabric.
Which would be what exactly?
Like a Super 180. Like it was very light, very airy feel, like merino wool, you know, very easy to wear. So like, you know, when you saw the pictures of him, like actually we made two suits actually. The first suit was like very African and very tribal in nature. It was beautiful. But once he put it on, Jim Moore being, you know, the legend and genius he is, he said...
Jim Moore's a creative director.
Yes, he was. And he said, you know what? I feel that this may be a bit much. I feel we may need to scale it back and push it forward in other areas. He has the natural... I'm saying all this to say that Colin has his own presence, so the suit didn't necessarily need to bring more presence. They just said, you know what, let's just create something that's more monochromatic and let him speak for himself. And like his, I mean, anybody who's seen the cover, he's not saying a word naturally because it's a picture, but his eyes are talking to you, asking you, are you going to be the one? And that's what Harriet Tubman used to always say. Like whenever she would, you know, free these people, she would ask the men specifically, are you the one? Like, are you the one who's going to help me? Or are you the one who's going to be a detriment to this? And that's what I thought was so amazing. I don't know if he felt that way when he took the picture, but it was just amazing that he had that in his eyes, and I saw that.
It's interesting, too, because I think of yourself so much as being about a kind of a natural drama anyway, and a way to sort of say that so often you dress people who are basically icons and, mm-hmm. and sort of magnets or really lightning rods for attention.
Yes.
So you also find a way to sort of de-emphasize that in the, yes. when you dress them, don't you?
Yes. I mean, well, when I'm meeting with someone, you know, I'm always thinking about what's my value proposition. Why is somebody coming to me versus going to someone else? And, you know, my sister would always say to me, you know, the thing that's so unique about you is that if you have 10 people and you line them up in a usual suspects line and they all have the same thing on, they're all going to look different. Because that's your ability is to bring out to accentuate the things that are incredible about them and to mask the things that are not. So, you know, it's a skill that I didn't know I had, because nobody's really like, when you're young and they ask you, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Everybody's like, oh, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be an attorney. Nobody's like, oh, I want to be a clothing designer. At least when I was going to school in 81.
That wasn't something you thought about.
Not at all. But like when you grow from 5'8 to 6'3 and a half over a 3-month interval, and your mother is like, we're rich in love, not finance, buddy. You got to figure it out. Guess what you have to do? You got to figure it out.
Because, I mean, it's so interesting, because hearing you say that, it's basically what you're saying your sister said about your ability to suss this out in other people. You had to do it for yourself first, didn't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, generally anything that is really, really efficient, you have to make sure that you've done inventory on yourself first. I mean, that's just what it is. If you want to be an effective leader, I mean, I would hope you would take inventory on yourself. So the stuff that you're talking about, when you're talking to people and people want to innately buy into something, that's just the nature of us. So if you are the shining light or the shining example of what you represent, it just makes it easier to buy into. And when you're not, when people see you, they're like, oh, I'm not buying into that. Because, I mean, like, it's immediate. Like, as soon as you see somebody, it's like you're an incredible orator. You're incredible at what you do. So people buy into you. When people see me, I'm generally going to be very well put together. And I'm put together because, when I have my life in order, for the most part, nobody's perfect. But that being said, I'm also selling you fine goods. So how can I sell you fine goods and I'm dressed in shorts and javelinas?
That's a very good point. but also, too, I want to get back to, because when I met you, I said that there is this sense of drama in the stuff that you do. I mean, there is something about you seeing the drama in somebody, sort of like seeing them as a character to some extent, and saying, well, how do I bring that character out of them, isn't it?
That's very interesting that you say that. Well, the thing is, again, whenever I'm meeting with somebody, I'm profusely thankful that someone is coming to me, because I know that the barrier to entry used to be high for custom clothing and just clothing in general, but now everybody's doing it. And you can call, you can get in touch, you can type up Alibaba and say, I'm looking for, a manufacturer, and they give you a manufacturer in wherever in the world, like in Indonesia, and all of a sudden you're a designer. But before, it was like, when I started, it was, what is your value proposition? Why are you valuable to this? So when you talk about the drama, like, the drama is when you're outfitting somebody or when you're meeting somebody, taking measurements, it's a very intimate. And I'm like putting the tape measure around your chest, around your arm, around your waist, your seat. Some guys are in their underwear. Like, so it's like it's a very intimate situation. So there's a lot of dead time of just silence. So what I found myself doing was kind of like what we're doing here. Like, I'm not interviewing the person, but I'm just talking to them because I want them to feel at ease. So through doing that, you learn so much about people. You love what they like, what they don't like, what their fears are, aspirations are, what's coming next. You learn all of these things. So the drama that you may see in the clothes is me knowing that this is specifically what this client A wants to get across, and client B, what they want to get across. And that's what you see.
So, Treatment, we're talking theater.
Yes.
With fashion designer Aurora Bottle.
Absolutely.
I guess I'm saying this, too, because I also think yourself as being Californian, and that the fabrics move. Because I think about Eastern stuff, and it's almost like that's more like a uniform, and there's a kind of the clothes often wear the people rather than the other way around.
Yes.
And the way you build fashion, the way you build wardrobe for people, is there is something inviting about it.
It's a movement. It's a movement. My mother, when I was younger, whenever she would see somebody who had on clothing that wasn't fitting them necessarily the way it was supposed to, she would say, look at that shirt wearing that man. And I'll say, wow, I never understood it. I never really understood until I got older and I had like this spurt. And then I understood that when you put clothing on, clothing is supposed to, like, enhance what you are. It's not supposed to make you. It's just supposed to pretty much bring out who you already are. So if you are princely in your ways or queen in your ways, the clothing is supposed to just add another extra layer on top of that. So, like, that's what – when we're talking about movement, suiting in California is not a 12-month proposition. It just isn't, because when it's 99 degrees outside, no matter how much of a suit lover you are, you're not going to wear one. At least I wouldn't, because it's too hot. So when you think about just the forces of nature in Los Angeles, you have to be very smart, because my business is interesting in that since suiting is not a 12-month proposition in Los Angeles. But you know what is a 12-month proposition, Elvis? Bills. Bills don't take off when your money's not coming in.
So I've heard.
So you have to be so you have to figure out ways to let your skill set rest on these clients that can sustain you through those hot months. So that's why you have different types of fabrics. And I would say it's the same set of circumstances for guys that are in New York and Chicago and London. You know, heavier fabrics generally don't move. So that's why you don't really get that sense of spirit, that sense of flow. But in Los Angeles specifically, you have semi-cold and then you have medium. Like, we don't really have seasons in Los Angeles. But it does get cold out here, though.
Ish.
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 There you go, ish.
Ish. But that movement, though, I mean, I really think about that with you more than anybody else, mm-hmm. that the fabrics really almost invite movement rather than—
Absolutely.
And that's something— when did you realize that that's who you were? Was that always something?
No, it was literally something that— so I worked at United Talent Agency, and there's a guy named by the name of Jeremy Zimmer who hired me. Like, whenever— I don't know how the process goes now, but— you go through several interview processes. And Claire Rue, who was an agent at UTA at the time, she represented John Singleton. I was friends with John Singleton's sister's boyfriend. And we went over to see the Tyson fight. And I was talking to her about what she did. And she told me, I'm an agent. I represent actors. I said, well, I would love to come by your office and just see what you do. So I came by the office, and she was like, you know, this is what it is. She's sitting in the corner office. It's like all of these assistants, all these agents. And she's like, you know, would you like to, you know, be in a training program? I said, yeah. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting into, but, like, that's what I wanted. I was just like, all right, cool. So I go through two interviews, and I land at Jeremy Zimmer. So Jeremy tells me he's a Lou Wasserman disciple. He's like, you're going to wear a blue suit, a navy suit or a gray suit, a white shirt, a gingham shirt. That's it. Hard-bottom shoes all the time. He says, Boz, either you're going to look like us or you're going to look like us. And I was like, okay. And what I expressed to him was, I was in a training program at that time. And I said, you know, Jeremy, like, people in the training program get paid peanuts, zero. But it's a delayed gratification, because if you make it through and you burst through the crescendo, like, you can make money that you never thought possible. So everybody is lining up. So I said, you know, I don't have the necessary finances to wear the
uniform.
Custom suit.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you got to figure it out. So that was pretty much my that was my ceiling there. But the reason why I'm telling you this story is because it was so interesting how after I left there, I went and worked at a production company. And that production company lost its deal. And we all got severance packages. And I took my severance package and I started a clothing brand. And when I started my clothing brand, I reached out to a lot of people who I had worked with at the agency, because that's your breadbasket.
Yeah, sure.
of potential clients.
Right.
And a lot of them were like, you don't know anything about clothing. And the few that believed in what I did, when they invited me over and I actually executed, they were like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. That's how the whole business was birthed. It was birthed literally because I literally was at a production company. That production company phased out. And I was like, well, what's my next step? And my sister said, you need to find something. You're going to hear my sister, my mother, my wife a lot in this 31 minutes. She said, you need to find something that you like to do that you can get paid at. And the simplest thing, I mean, like, that's like the simplest sentence, but it meant so much. It was so profound to me, because I was like, well, I need to figure out something. And I knew that I had always had problems after the summer of my 10th grade year going to the 11th grade. I knew that I had problems finding clothes. So I said, well, if I have this problem, it's not something, this is unique to me, but nobody else is addressing it. So let me start to do stuff for these guys. And that's how it happened.
We'll take a break. I guess for a Boswell designer, it's The Treatment. More to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Seen on Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Seen on Screen is available now, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW Donation Car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. I'm the regular guy who hosts the treatment. My guest is Warwick Boswell, fashion designer extraordinaire. Hey. And one of the things you were talking about, that I wanted to get to, rather, is that we're talking about famous people.
Yes.
And sort of talking, we're thinking about what people want. They want to be shown something.
Yes, they do.
And they may not, we may not all be over 6 feet, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a sense of glamour.
Absolutely.
And what has happened for the NBA, and the reason I brought this up, and I think so many others too, is that there has been a shift in the way that they dress. They dress more like regular people now than looking like they're wearing costumes.
Absolutely.
But you want to bring something that makes that regular guy wear distinctive. And all the things I'm talking about with you, that sense of theater, clothes that have a sense of movement. I mean, we want to be able to think that we can get stuff like that and have it feel look as good as it looks on those guys. And but there's also, in all these pictures, I mean, even that Colin Kaepernick picture, which is really a dramatic picture, but there's also a sense of sort of being relaxed in that. I mean, he's not bound up in that at all. And what you do is offer attire that doesn't feel like it's shackling you.
Yes, yes. So I always tell clients when I'm meeting with them, the way your sweat, the way you feel in a sweatsuit is how you should feel in something that I prepare for you. You should be that comfortable. But you also, like, I have this client, and he said to me, Boz, when you wear casual clothes, the way you stand is different from your stance when you're wearing a suit. And I didn't understand it until he said it to me. And then I noticed, like, when you're in a suit or if you're in something that's custom made for you, my father would always say, you know, shoulders back, chest out. Like it's just, it's automatic when you put on like a suit versus when you put on like a t-shirt. So again, I tell clients that when you put this on, if a client is getting one piece from me, I say, I'm going to apologize to you right now because after you put this on, you won't be able to wear anything else in your closet. I'm going to apologize to you right now. And generally these guys generally double back and, you know, they say, okay, well, let me get, you know, 5, 10, 15 of them. But, like, you know, it's something to be said about something that's made specifically for you. Because we all have two hands, but we all have different fingerprints. You could be 6'3", and I could be 6'3", but the way our bodies are shaped, like, nobody is the same. Everybody is different.
But there's also something about that, too, in dressing NBA players, and yourself, too, is that if you're a man of color who's also a man of stature, there's often a perceived threat in that.
Oh, absolutely.
And the idea of dressing somebody in a way that sort of says there's pride here, but not in sense of, not a sense of intimidation. I mean, that's a really interesting line to have to have to toe all the time, isn't it?
Oh my God, this is a deeper conversation, much deeper.
Nobody ever says that, but okay, go.
Right. Well, the reason I say that is because when I was working at the agencies, like, you know, you got to remember, like, I'm 6'7". The majority of the guys at the agencies are like, you know, either guys from New York or guys from Middle America who came to Los Angeles and made a boatload of bread. I say all that to say, like, I'm the tallest guy in the room and also the darkest guy in the room. So I found myself at a certain point where I was just like, I was kind of like not standing at my tallest, just kind of like bending down to just kind of blend in. But you can't, like, if you're 6'7½", you can't blend in. It's just what it is. And I found, like, my voice was very soft, like, it was very light when I was around, like, certain people, because I didn't want them to feel intimidated. I mean, like, all the things that African-Americans deal with in the country that's just unspoken, right? So, like, after I, like, left and started to do my own business, now when you walk in those rooms, you're walking in completely different because you're coming from an area of expertise now. So if you're coming in with an air of expertise, that also has its own thing where, like, you know, your sense of pride is way different. The way people address you is different because they are purchasing something from you. Whereas when you're just like a trainee, it's like you're just almost like a lackey, like whatever.
We're getting deep here in the truth. My guest is Warwick Boswell, fashion designer and caller out of lack of diversity in the entertainment business. But Here's one of the reasons I want to have you come here to talk about this, because I think it's important as a person of color and person of stature to be providing an entree into the world of style. Mm-hmm. I think is a remarkable thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it becomes aspirational in a way that a lot of people, let's say in the mainstream, might not even see.
Right.
And what you do by offering that example by who you are and the kinds of people who you dress,
right,
who people see in your stuff, offers, I think, a ray of hope. I mean, that people have a way to step up into a world of glamour that's
absolutely
not all controlled
absolutely
by white people.
Absolutely, absolutely. My father, when he was reaching his later years, he would just say, like, "I'm tired." I didn't understand what he was talking about. And, you know, it was like it would always come on the heels of him seeing something on TV that happened to somebody of color. And it would just be so ridiculous. And he would say, like, "I'm tired because you have this situation that's happening to us that's omnipresent and we have no way of controlling it." You know what I mean? Like, if you think about, bruh, I want to live the rest of my life, so I'm going to just taper what I'm talking about here. But it's him saying what he said, like, I understand it now, because you just, again, you have these situations that just happen to us predominantly. And it's just like, what can we do that will make the people who are inflicting this upon us understand that this isn't what you should be doing, and do that in a safe and civil manner when what you're being subjugated to is not safe and civil?
This gets back to what I was talking about. One of the reasons I want to have you here, because there's a kind of perception,
mm-hmm,
that we're really what we're talking about, and how that perception is dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what you're doing is offering, not part, what you're doing is sort of saying, we belong.
Absolutely.
And absolutely, and there's pride and pleasure to be taken in that.
Absolutely.
And again, even going back to that Colin Kaepernick GQ cover, you can there's a, that pleasure radiates from the picture, that
mm-hmm,
relaxation I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
That suit belongs on him.
Absolutely.
And just seeing the reason, it may seem like I was maybe a little bit of low-hanging fruit in talking about the NBA stars, but
mm-hmm,
those people who are that public dressing like that and being dressed by you,
mm-hmm,
says to people the narrative is changing.
Absolutely. It's already changed. And the thing is, at the beginning of this interview, I said that everybody wants pretty much the same thing. We want our children to be educated. We want, you know, we want to, if we're entrepreneurs, to have the most successful business. If we're working for somebody, we want safe working conditions. Everybody wants that, no matter what color you are. But when you're thinking about, you know, segments of the population that are systematically being removed from certain situations, when people from those groups make it to the top, they deserve to be there more than anybody, even more than the people at the top, because their road, our road, is way more difficult than theirs would ever be. Like, if you think about the situation with the parents who were paying to have their children admitted. Then I heard something the other day about, like, there are all these different types of parents. There are the helicopter parents, there are snowplow parents. I never heard any of these terms until I had children. But snowplow parents make sure that their children don't experience any adversity, which is insane to me. So when I say to you, like, for me to be sitting in this seat, my road was way different than Tom Ford's or Ralph Lauren's. Not to say that they didn't have adversity, but their adversity was not like mine in any stretch of the imagination. Because I feel if I were them, like, I would already be, like, astronomically in a completely different place financially, embraced completely different by the United States, by the world. And I always tell people, like, everybody wants to be black till the police come.
That's not true. Until they call the police, you don't have to get there. As soon as you heard that, the nine has been hit.
Yep.
No, there's not two more digits coming after that, are there? But I said this to say that there is, and you know this too, there has always been a kind of black style that has led the way in popular culture that has not yet been embraced.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say incrementally now being embraced by the fashion world.
Mm-hmm.
Are you feeling that there's progress, that this progress has been made? I know there's still a lot more progress to be made, but
mm-hmm,
do you think there's been some inroads made?
Oh, I definitely feel that there are inroads.
You think about the time from Willie Smith to Virgil Abloh, that's 30 years.
Yeah, that's a long, yeah. Well, and also you have to also remember, like, the era that I was blessed enough to come up in was it was an era where the entertainers, specifically black entertainers, were open to actually doing business with somebody who was African American. Because some of those designers that you will Willie wear, there were a couple of designers of that ilk that said they had the hardest time putting stuff on African American celebrities in their era because those celebrities felt like it's not good enough. It's unfortunate, but I mean, it just is what it is. So like when you have a brand like Louis Vuitton, like they're smarter than like everybody because they're like, you know what? Well, we see what this is. So we're just going to circumvent this and we're just going to bring him in. And as long as he is profitable, he'll be here. Period. If you're not profitable, you're gone. That's just what it is.
But you think about what the fashion houses are doing, like the Gucci thing with that balaclava, basically it's like a racist piece.
Or yes.
The racist piece of accessory wear that Prada put out. Mm-hmm. There's still, obviously, walls, barriers that need to be broken in those places just because if there aren't people of color around, then why would they think about it?
There's no diversity in that room. Which is, you know what's so crazy to me is that, like, if you are, like, anybody who does a caricature, like, you know what, it doesn't start with when it hits the floor or hits the store floor. It's in the process of drafting this up. Like, you had to see sketches of that. You had to have a mold made of that caricature with those big lips, all that. I'm thinking nowhere in that process did somebody say, you know what, let's do some research on this to see if this is harmful to anyone's psyche. That's what's so amazing to me. I was looking at this interview that T.I. did, and he said, why are you all continually giving your money to people who continuously give you their asses to kiss? And the thing is, like, you know, like, people make mistakes, but it's like pandemic, whether it's like the boy wearing the, the shirt, you know, coolest monkey. It's like, you should know. It doesn't matter what his mother said, like, oh, I don't think it was. Like, you just don't do that. And you should know better than to do that, because if it's a situation that affects those people who work at these companies, if, like, my brand was to do something that directly, and I had the same exposure and same marketing budget, if I were to make something that has something crazy about one of those ethnic groups, it would be a bomb that would go off in my province, in my backyard, in my life, period. So they need to think about those things as they're making, like, the turtleneck with the black lips. Like, it's like comical, but it's comical. Like Dave Chappelle said, he was laughing. He said, this comedy is killing me inside, but he was laughing because it's just so deliberate and so ridiculous that you're like, wait a minute, you all are grown. You all can't do any research?
Not only the purchasing power, but also the style impact. I mean, it's absolutely not just one absent the other. It's absolutely all of this.
Absolutely.
And the kinds of really sort of real estate that black culture is given to these brands.
Absolutely. Free.
There's clearly a lot more to talk about. You got to come back and do the show because, my friend, we're out of time.
Yes.
My guess is wherever possible. First of all, what's your website so people can find us?
So I have two brands. War Air Boswell, WARAIRE, Boswell, BOSWELL. That's the suiting. That is the casual, better goods. All goods on that platform are custom. Then for ready to wear, for a younger consumer, I have War Air. And that's WARAIRE.
Well, I guess it's War Air Boswell. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Much respect to you. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Josh Newell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Fife, who's associate producer. I gotta get some better clothes. It's the treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.